Let's get joined up. This week's show is sponsored by Bandcamp.com, an online record store and music community where passionate fans discover, connect with, and directly support the artists they love. There's thousands of bands and artists on there, including my band, The Rye Dogs, whose second album, Pigs Might Fly, is out right now. Here's a quick snippet of the title track, which is also available on Spotify, Amazon, and Apple Music. It's totally free to join Bandcamp, and as the Rye Dogs are brand new members, we're now looking to grow our fan base, so your support would be greatly appreciated. Just search the Rye Dogs, that's W-R-Y Dogs, and hit the follow button. Right, now we can cue the theme tune. Hello and welcome to the Joined Up Writing Podcast, where a little procrastination can go a long way. I'm Wayne Kelly and it's episode 189 with Katie Bishop talking about her new book, The Girls of Summer. It's a great chat and it covers everything from unreliable narrators to Katie's writing process and a difficult journey to publication. We also talked about how important the thinking part of writing is, and that brings me on to my brief catch-up before we get to the interview. As mentioned in my previous intro, I've just come back from a hectic week with the day job, with some long days and nights and editing videos in Spain. It sounds glamorous. It wasn't. I've just come back with less of a tan than when I left, actually, which is great. Anyway, despite my best efforts, it was very difficult to get any writing done, or to be honest, to get the headspace to even think about my writing. And it's only now, after a few days back, that I've been able to bring my mind back to the job in hand. And something else that really resonated with me was an interview with the American comedian Stephen Wright. He was talking about the power, well, the luxury, I guess, of having time to do nothing and how important it is to the creative process. Because we spend most of our time in like a flurry of activity, desperate to be productive, whatever that means. But sometimes the best ideas come from allowing ourselves the space to just sit and think. And I've talked about it on here before, you know, about the power of the subconscious or the back brain to do the heavy lifting with plotting or problem solving. And I think giving ourselves permission to do nothing, to just sit and think or go for a walk, can be really helpful. Obviously, at some point, we have to sit down and actually do the work, but I just think we should all be a little kinder to ourselves and allow for these short breaks where we step away from screens and books and emails and deadlines and all the rest of it. You know, don't even get out a notebook. Just let your mind wander and see what happens. If nothing else, it's a psychological breather for the next spell of activity. But as Katie talks about in today's interview, I think we should also remember that thinking is very much a part of the process. So embrace it and don't just use word counts and pages as a yardstick for progress. So aside from that little bit of mystical sounding advice, back in the real world, I've had the first two rejections from my latest batch of submissions. They were from publishers, and so they were relatively quick, which I suppose is a small mercy. But unfortunately, no useful feedback other than the usual form rejection. And it's to be expected, and as my mentor reminded me, the no's always come before the yes's, but you know, it still kind of stings and you start to feel your positivity wobbling a bit. Still, all I can do is focus on writing the next thing, which will probably be my standalone crime novel, The Rushes, which I'm about 30,000 words into anyway, rather than doing any more work on the Safe Hands follow-up, at least for the time being. I've got lots of good writing friends like Dan Howarth, Jim Snell, Erica Waller and my mentor, Lauren North, and all of them inspire me to stop moaning and just keep working, so I will. But what about you? How are you all faring with your projects and your motivation? I'd love to hear all about it, so get in touch. And you can do that by emailing wayne@waynekellywrites.com or dropping me a line on the FB page. Also, don't forget to join the email mailing list at joinedupwriting.co.uk. It's totally free and you get a couple of downloadable goodies when you sign up. and you'll be the first to find out about upcoming shows, events, workshops, and anything else that's going on. Right, enough about me. Let's get to today's interview with Katie Bishop. Katie is a writer and journalist based in Birmingham, UK. She's written for The New York Times, The Guardian, Vogue, The Independent, and loads of other publications. The Girls of Summer is her first novel, and it's out everywhere on May the 25th. So enjoy the chat, and I'll pop back at the end to wrap things up. Joined up writing. Okay, Katie, thanks so much for coming on to Joined Up Writing. Really appreciate it. So why don't you just start off by telling us, giving us a sense of how things are and also where you're speaking from?
Yeah, so I am currently speaking from my attic bedroom in my house in Birmingham. I'm very lucky to have a spare bedroom. Nice. I get to use in my office, although I am also quite bad for writing in bed quite a lot. So it doesn't get used as probably as much as it should. Yeah, in terms of how things are, I'm a few weeks away from publication of my debut novel. So as you can imagine, things are kind of a bit nerve-wracking and terrifying at the minute, but also really exciting as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, why don't you tell us about that book, The Girls of Summer?
Yeah, so The Girls of Summer, I'd kind of describe it as a kind of one that got away story flipped on its head. It's about a woman called Rachel, and she is in her mid-30s, and she's kind of quite settled, but she's also never quite been able to let go of this amazing, all-consuming romance that she had back when she was 17, and she was backpacking around the Greek islands. And when we first meet her, she is actually going back to that beautiful, isolated Greek island where she spent a summer as a teenager, this time with her husband, Tom. And when she's there, she has a chance encounter with a woman that she used to know back during that time. And this kind of sends her spiraling back into all these amazing, incredible memories of this summer when she was partying and she was drinking and she was making friends. And in particular, she was falling in love with this guy called Alistair, who she really still considers to be her first love. But he was actually about 15 years older than her at the time. And Rachel decides that she actually would like to track Alistair down. And we really kind of go along on this journey with her as she looks for Alistair, but also falls really deeply back into all of those memories of that summer and starts to realize that maybe her memories aren't quite what they seemed, and maybe something a little bit more sinister was actually going on at the time. And it's really, it's a book about memory, as you might kind of get from that. But also kind of about power and consent and trauma. And I think it speaks to something that a lot of women have kind of been experiencing over the last few years, and particularly since the Me Too movement, when people are looking back on these kind of formative sexual and romantic experiences and kind of starting to realize that maybe things aren't how they've always remembered them, and maybe even the way they were experiencing them at the time through that kind of that gloss of naivety and youth, maybe things weren't actually quite even how they were experiencing them at the time. And the book really just explores that tension.
It sort of reminds me in a way, you know, that kind of idea, as you say, how unreliable your memory can be. And I think we'd all agree with that anyway, when you start remembering something or chatting about something that happened in the past with other people that were there and everyone's different perception of it. But it's a little bit like, you know, in writing terms, I guess it's like the idea of an unreliable narrator. It's almost as if, you know, that story that you told yourself originally is not quite what you thought, isn't it?
Yeah, such an interesting point, because I find unreliable narrators really interesting. But of course, the reveal with that normally is that the narrator is unreliable, and they've kind of known that all along. And we, as the reader, the people haven't known that. But I guess in this case, the thing that's really interesting is that the narrator might be unreliable, but they themselves don't know that they're unreliable.
That's right, and I think
the point that you made there is really interesting about memory and things, as one of the kind of starting points of the book was, I don't know if you've ever had conversations like this, but the amount of times I've had conversations with friends and we'll be kind of talking about a past event or something that happened, and you've got a conflicting version of it with somebody, and you're both so convinced that the way that you're remembering it is true.
But of course,
both things can't be true. I think it's a really interesting idea.
And it's that idea of, like, what, you know, when we say true, what do we mean by that anyway? Because there's very rarely, especially when it comes to something like that, where you've got, you know, where there's multiple people and you've all got your own kind of, as you say, your own version of the truth, if you like that. And as far as you're concerned, that is your truth, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think as a writer, it's a really interesting thing to kind of get to play with. And something I did with the book, it split into two dual narratives. And that was something that was really kind of fun to explore and kind of think about the ways that those unreliable aspects and those different versions of the truth would kind of gradually be revealed both to the protagonist, Rachel, but also to the reader as well.
Yeah, great. So do you remember what the initial inspiration was? And obviously there's the kind of background, the cultural stuff, the Me Too and everything. But I think you mentioned there possibly your own backpacking trip from your youth. Was that kind of a jumping off point for you?
Yeah, it definitely was. So I've done quite a lot of traveling, and particularly when I was younger, so probably about, I think I was 21, went on a big backpacking trip with one of my best female friends. And, you know, female friendship is such a big thing in the novel. So that was definitely an inspiration for kind of the setting, and that massive sense of the world feeling so open, and those kind of possibilities that you really, really feel when you're that age and when you're exploring the world. Which I think there's a real sense of kind of the world narrowing down as you get older. Mm-hmm. And that is something that Rachel is really struggling with in the book. So that was something that was kind of interesting for me to explore. But also in terms of the setting and that kind of idea of traveling things, I did start writing the book during the first lockdown, which I'm sure we can only remember all too well. It was such a claustrophobic time. And yeah. I was just stuck in my living room, as everyone else was, thinking like, God, I really want a holiday.
Yeah.
So that was a big part of the setting as well. And I think, you know, when you read the book, you can really feel it. And in the island, it's got such a sense of kind of claustrophobia and isolation at the same time as it's got this sense of the world just being this kind of astonishing new place that Rachel's discovering. And I think that really comes across when you know that I wrote it in lockdown. I think
that was your escape.
It's very apparent. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
That was your way of getting out. And how did the novel, did it kind of evolve during its creation? Did you have a clear idea that you'd always be tackling these types of issues that you mentioned at the top there? Or did you find that it was kind of emerging? Because a lot of writers talk about the fact that, I mean, this is definitely the case for me. We often don't know what we're writing about, what the book is actually about until we've finished it, you know, even if you're a planner or whatever. But in terms of the themes and what the story actually is about, I often don't know until I've finished. I'm like, oh, this is about fatherhood, or this is about whatever. So was that the case for you, or was it always a case of, no, I know, you know, was it ever like a straight nostalgic kind of romance story in your head, did it change as it went along?
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I definitely think when you finish a book and other people read it, people do start to pull out themes that you weren't quite sure were there. And of course they always were there, but
yeah.
You didn't know it when you were writing it, which is such a funny thing. But I think with the specific Me Too thing, there was definitely a kind of a kernel of it right from the start. So the idea of it being a want the go away story, kind of as you picked up on there was almost a separate idea of that to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd been writing another novel, which we can talk about later if you want, but it had not been going well at all. And so I think I really just needed something that felt very escapist at the time and just felt a bit lighter. So I kind of had this idea of this one that got away story, and someone looking back on that kind of amazing, exciting period of their life. And I was kind of thinking, oh yeah, this will feel like a really kind of fun, light thing to write, which is not how the book turns out. So that was one idea. And then I think I did just have that separate idea as well, where, you know, I think when I started writing it, it had been about 3 years since the Me Too movement really took hold.
Yeah.
And I'd just been spending so much of that time just having conversations with other women, having conversations with friends, where kind of everyone was having the same kind of almost this moment of horror of realizing that experiences that they had had, maybe experiences that we'd even kind of talked about at the time, they were looking at them very differently now. So I kind of had those two ideas separately. And then I thought it would be really interesting to see those two ideas come together and kind of what would it mean if that big defining love affair, that one you were never able to get over and that in some ways has really shaped your entire life since then, what if you were forced to look at that and realize that it was not how you had always thought that it was? And I just thought that would be such an interesting tension to play with. And that's just really where the idea of the book came from.
Yeah, amazing. And how did you find the editorial process on the book? Did that help you to crystallize and emphasize some of these themes and build on them even more, would you say?
So by editorial process, do you mean kind of once I'd got an agent?
When you actually started working with an editor.
Yeah. So it was obviously a really new experience for me. So it's kind of difficult to kind of maybe compare it to, you know, other books or, you know, other processes.
Sure, yeah.
But I think for me, I do think that the idea was quite crystallized by the time that it got to my agent. Mm-hmm. And to my editors. I did do some work with my agent on the book before we sent it out on submission. Mm-hmm. And I did also, I've got two really amazing editors, one in the UK and one in the US. I'm so lucky to work with both of them. They're brilliant. And they really helped to draw out some particular ideas in the book, particularly about kind of victimhood and things like that, that I hadn't really thought about. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the actual editorial process, we didn't make any huge changes. I didn't have to do kind of a big structural re-edit or really shift a lot of ideas around. It was more about fine-tuning it and just pulling out some of those more subtle aspects of it, I think.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, so let's, as you kind of alluded to there, you mentioned some of your other stuff. Let's take a bit of a step backwards and tell me a bit about you in terms of how you came to writing initially, because I know you write full-time. What is some of your earliest memories of writing? Is it something you've always loved?
Oh, absolutely always. I think it's a bit of a cliche to say, but I just don't remember a time when I didn't write. Mm-hmm. It's quite funny when you go back to my parents' house now, they've got literal boxes and boxes of things that I wrote when I was really, really young. I mean, it was actually quite useful because I had a habit of writing. I had these little school exercise books and I'd write on the front by Katie Bishop, age 6 or age 7.
You were already getting into the swing of things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, thank God that we don't actually have to put our ages on the covers of our books now. But I would fill these exercise books. And I mean, I was a total plagiarist. If you look at them, they're all like complete rip-offs off of Enid Blyton books. Or
They were homages.
That is a great way of looking at it. But when you're looking at just the whole plot of like Black Beauty, just written in child's handwriting in a children's exercise book, it's quite funny. Always wrote, always loved to write, kind of carried that on throughout my life. I went to uni and studied English literature in the end. And to be honest, by that point, I wasn't really thinking about writing professionally. Mm-hmm. I think I knew that I loved reading and I knew that I really enjoyed writing. But I think I had a bit of a feeling that I wasn't really good enough. It was just something that I kind of never thought that I could actually do. And I mean, I didn't kind of know anyone who works in any kind of creative industry. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know anyone who kind of freelanced or anything like that, in anything even remotely related to writing. So I just kind of thought, you know what, I don't think that this is for me. I don't think it's the kind of thing that I could even visualize myself doing. Mm-hmm. So I actually, when I left university, went backpacking for a while, as we mentioned. And then I actually went into academic publishing, which I think I just thought, I knew I wanted to work with books. If I couldn't write books, which I didn't think I could, maybe I could help editing other people's, and maybe that would be what I was going to do.
Yeah.
But again, that didn't kind of go quite to plan, because I would have loved to kind of work in trade publishing and be working with, you know, the kind of fun books that we see in Waterstones. Mm-hmm. That didn't really work out for me. And I ended up in academic publishing, kind of working on some really quite dry books. I was working medical publishing for a bit and then economics publishing, just things that I just knew. I spent a lot of time blagging because it was just things I knew nothing about.
Yeah.
And then because I wasn't kind of very happy in that job, I started doing a bit of just freelance writing on the side. A little bit of journalism, kind of things like that. And then on the side of that, I then started writing a novel, which was not The Girls of Summer. It was the novel I wrote before The Girls of Summer.
Yeah.
And just really went from there, just kind of learned that process then of just really how to write a novel in the first place.
I think it's so interesting what you said about the fact that this story kind of comes up time and time again with so many people that I speak to for the show, is this idea that we, and I include myself in this, we all start off really, really, really passionate about writing and reading and words, and it seems to be something that as soon as we can actually draw, you know, write a sentence, then we start writing and we're kind of nuts on it. And then we get to sort of the time that we need to be thinking about, okay, what am I going to do for a career? And so many of us, you know, myself included, were like, well, I can't actually see a career that I can do, you know, right now. I didn't know anybody, as you say, I didn't know anybody else that was a writer or that was in publishing or anything like that. I come from a working class background, and even the idea of journalism, when I went to see my, jobs advisor type person when I was in high school, and said, oh, I was thinking about wanting to do journalism, they sort of pulled a face and sort of said, Oh, that's very hard to get into. And and that sort of really put me off. So it's something that I hear so many times, over and over again. But then obviously over a period of time we kind of get called back to it, and it's something that we can't stop doing. So with your first the novel, that you were writing before Girls of Summer, because again, this is something that comes up on the show lots of times. Your first book is The actual first published book is very rarely your first book. So tell me a little bit about that. I know not necessarily you have to tell me about the story or whatever. If you don't want to, that's fine. But what happened with that, and how did you go with it? Did you actually finish a whole draft of it, or did you get stuck on the first draft like so many people do? Where were you with
Well, I finished many drafts of it, which was kind of the
that?
problem. So I started writing it probably, oh gosh, I was probably about 24, I think, something like that when I started writing it. And I mean, well, I must have been younger actually, because I think I was writing it for about 4 or 5 years. It took me such a long time, and it was really like getting blood out of a stone. It was such a long process. And I think in total, I wrote about 12 drafts, which is, I mean, I'm sure, I know a lot of people are really like redrafting, but redrafting is something that I do not enjoy. So those 12 drafts were a struggle. And I finished it and I felt pretty happy with it. Obviously I've put a lot of time into it at that point. I wouldn't have put that much time into it unless I kind of really loved it and really loved the characters. So I decided to start sending out agents, which I did, and sent it out to, in total, probably about 40 or 50 agents. Obviously that was over kind of a long period of time because it was kind of in batches, as people do. And I got some good feedback. I got a few people requested to see the whole thing, not very many, maybe three or four, I think. Obviously, none of those actually wanted to take it on. And one agent kind of showed a bit of interest. So again, I went through kind of a few stages of kind of revising it, kind of hoping that they would eventually take it on. But that didn't happen. And I kind of reached a bit of a, I guess, a bit of a crossroads where I thought, I've only sent out to 50 agents. There's a lot more agents out there. Do I keep on sending out to agents? Do I keep on revising it, or do I want to focus my energies somewhere else? And the decision I made was to focus my energies somewhere else, and that project turned into the Girls of Summer in the end. So it was an interesting experience. I think it was a big learning experience ultimately, and I definitely don't look back at that now and, regret that decision that I made to give up on that novel. I think it was absolutely the right decision at the time.
And as you say, it's a part of learning how to write, isn't it? Lots of people learn to write a novel by writing a novel. I think that's the best way to do it. Was it the same sort of genre as Girls of Summer, or was it totally different?
It was similar. It was a book that covered a lot of kind of feminist topics, which is very much the vein of the Girl of Summer. I would say it was a lot slower. It was probably a little bit more kind of character driven. And yeah, just a much slower paced novel, I think, which was kind of that was a lot of the feedback that I got from agents. A lot of people, said, "Oh, we love your writing." That was what I would always get, like, "Your writing is amazing." But there's not kind of a strong enough hook. But there's not kind of a strong enough or a kind of compelling enough narrative drive. Narrative drive was they were words I heard a lot when I was submitting that to agents. So I think that was, it's kind of like you say, it's a thing where you have to learn how to write a novel, right? And kind of the only way to do that is to actually write one. And I think we kind of approach writing novels in such a strange way, in that people think, oh, you're going to write one novel and that's going to be the one that you sell, and that's going to be the one that makes your career. But I mean, I know some people do that, and absolutely fair play to them, but I just can't. I'm
I
so
hate
impressed by
them.
that. I don't
I'm
know. I don't
not
know.
fair play. I hate them.
I'm just so impressed by it.
No,
I'm
I
just,
am. It's amazing.
yeah, I haven't read back that novel for a long time. But I imagine I would cringe a bit now if I read it. Obviously, at the time, I thought it was great, but I'm sure I would cringe a bit now if I read it back.
What lessons do you think you learned from it to take into the Girls of Summer in terms of the feedback that you got there in the writing process? Well, I mean, what in terms of the actual process of writing the Girls of Summer, did you find it more enjoyable, easier, smoother path in terms of the actual writing of it as a result of that first experience, would you say?
Yeah, so well, The Girls of Summer was an absolute dream to write. I feel very lucky now looking back at it, because I think even at the time I didn't realize quite how much of a rare experience that was. So again, I started writing it at the start of lockdown, and I think in total it took me about 8 or 9 months to get a first draft. And because I'd had that experience of revising a novel loads of times before and kind of redrafting it and everything like that, I was really expecting a similar experience with The Girls of Summer. So I thought, okay, right, you know, that was a really fast first draft, but now the kind of hard work starts. And I just sat down and I read it and I thought, you know what, actually, I think I'm fairly happy with this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I did edit it and I did make some changes and things, but I think in total making those changes probably took me about 3 months. I think it was about a year in total from having the idea to having a finished manuscript that I was ready to send out, which was just obviously my mind was kind of blown because it was just an opposite experience from what I'd had before. But in terms of what I think I learned from the first one, obviously, you know, it's such a great opportunity to have agents look at your novel. And, you know, even if they say no, you're getting the best people in the business to read your work and get feedback on it, which is just invaluable. So actually the thing about narrative drive was something that I really absorbed. And, you know, I thought, you know, I would love to just write this slow novel where nothing really happens and it's beautifully written and all of that kind of thing. Ultimately people aren't going to want to read it, to be totally honest. So figuring out how to work out narrative drive was a really, really important thing for me. I think the other thing was, and I don't know if you found this as well with writing yours, but I think when you write your first novel, you've probably been thinking your whole life about how you want to write a novel. Mm-hmm. So you've got a million ideas and a million things that you've thought of before that you would love to put in a novel. Then your first novel, you just try and put everything that you've ever
thought. You throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah, just every thought you've ever had goes into that novel. And then when, you know, like when you were kind of saying, what are some of the key themes in The Girls of Summer? And have you realized those since you finished writing it? With that, if someone sat down to read it and you said, what are the themes? Honestly, there'd be a list as long as my arm. It would have just been insane. So I think just that kind of process of just figuring out what you actually want to write about, I think that was the biggest thing that I learned from that scrapped first novel, and just kind of really narrowing that down and focusing in on just telling a kind of single story that was very focused and was actually what I wanted to talk about.
I think you're right about the distilling the ideas thing as well. Even aside from the plot, you're right. It's like we do sort of every little thought that we've had or, you know, idea about something or whatever, whether you like it or not, often gets thrown in with that first thing. And even, you know, when you get to the end of the first draft, one of the things with the first edit is often, what am I actually wanting to focus on? What am I actually wanting to talk about? And that's the thing that I need to be sort of pointing in the direction of, and all this other stuff probably needs to come out or be saved for another time or something. And in terms of go on.
That's the thing, you can always save stuff for another time. You know, it's hard cutting stuff out, but there's you know, there's always another novel, you can always stick it in somewhere else. So
and in terms of that narrative drive, were there certain things that sort of stood out for you or that you sort of had in mind when you approach the writing of the next? But when you say narrative drive, were there certain things? Was it about pace? Was it about the number of characters that you had? In terms of the tense that you chose, what sort of things went into that for you? What sort of types of decisions did you make to help with the narrative drive, do you think?
So I think kind of just that distilling it down to a much more tight focus was a big thing. And I think also, so again, I've kind of mentioned that The Girls of Summer has a dual narrative. So it flips back and forth in time. And I think the reason why I did that, so I'm someone who's very, very interested in those kind of psychological things like memory and kind of how people are viewing their experiences and things like that. But ultimately that makes for a very, very slow book, and it doesn't necessarily make for a very interesting book. So I think having that dual narrative was really, really important to me, because you could then have the kind of slightly slower narrative. There is still some stuff going on it that I think pulls the narrative along, but the slightly slower narrative of Rachel.
Be a bit more reflective and stuff.
Yeah, a little bit more reflective, just kind of seeing Rachel come to a few realizations along the way, but then you're also seeing that much more kind of active experience of her actually living those moments that she's reflecting back on. So I think that was something that was really important in really pulling the narrative along, and meaning that I wasn't compromising and that I wasn't cutting all of that kind of very reflective, very emotional stuff from the story, but there was also enough there to really keep people engaged and keep the reader interested as well.
And are you somebody that likes to outline heavily before you start, or was it a case of you kind of got a rough idea and you just went hell for leather with it?
Well, I'm not someone who likes to outline, but I think I'm someone who has to outline.
That's a good way of looking at it.
I really don't enjoy it. But I've tried it both ways. So with that first novel that got scrapped, I did not outline. I just wrote. And again, I think that really led to that lack of focus in it. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote The Girls of, when I started to sit down to write The Girls of Summer, I think that was again something that I'd learned that I needed to, even if I hated, even if it was like pulling teeth, I needed to get some sort of outline down. Mm-hmm. And I think what I learned is I really don't like outlining all the way through. Mm-hmm. Because I think for me, my best thinking happens when I'm writing. I find it very difficult to just sit down and look at a laptop screen and be like, right, what's going to happen?
Yeah, me too.
I think a lot of people feel the same, right? Those thoughts just come to you as you're interacting with the characters and the stories that are happening to them. So what I tried to do with The Girls of Summer and what I kind of try and stick to now is to try and kind of outline maybe a few chapters, maybe the first kind of quarter of the book or something like that, write that. And then when you get to that point, the next quarter, or maybe you'll be as you go along while you're writing that quarter, you're adding things to the plan. So you're just kind of always a few steps ahead of yourself. And I think that really helps just A, focusing it, and B, it means you never kind of sit down at your laptop and you're like, what am I writing today? You've always got something that you can sit down and be like, right, this is the scene I plan to write next. So this is what I'm writing today. And I just think that helps a lot in motivation.
Definitely. I mean, and that's kind of where I've been with the thing that I'm working on now, that I'm very similar to what you've just described there. At least I know I'm a few steps ahead, but even so, I would still like to be somebody that can properly outline the whole novel before I start writing. I would really like to be able to do that, because I've spoken to people that interviewed people, and I know I've got writer friends that can outline like that to the nth degree before they even start writing chapter one, and they seem to write their books much quicker than I do, and they seem to be able, it seems to be a much smoother process. I know they still have to have the thought time and everything that goes into it, and I know somebody, they write, because my first drafts usually are quite long and then I cut them back, but people that outline heavily they're often short. Their first draft is short, and then they add words in terms of padding things out or adding to some of the themes, or, you know, building on some of the characterization, whereas they've probably just written the story out as it is, as it's outlined. So I would really like to be one of those people that could outline the whole thing, but I don't know why we keep fighting it. I think your process is your process.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. And I think I was speaking to somebody recently who, they said they will never start writing something unless they have the closing scene in their head. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I mean, again, just very impressed by them, because I would find it very hard to visualize that, I think. But also I thought, God, that must be such a relief, because the thing that's always hanging over me is what is the last scene going to be? But I will never know until I'm really, really far in. So,
I find it's quite stressful with, especially depending on the genre as well that you're writing in, I guess. But if you're sort of, you know, early on in the book and you're coming up with all these kind of complications for your character and you're throwing different problems and things at them, and the whole time in the back of your head is, it's all right getting them into this. That's the easy part. How am I going to get them out of it? That's the thing that kind of stresses me out.
So when are you just completely you just go into it and just start writing, or do you have like a little vague outline or?
Yeah, I'll often have an idea. What helps often for me is thinking, sort of conning myself into the idea that I kind of know where the story's going, that I've got an idea of how I think it's going to end. It never ends that way, but it seems to be that I at least have to believe that it's, so I've got a general direction to go off into and something I think that I'm trying to get to. And then when I get actually into the novel properly, and the characters come to life, that's really when the story comes to life, because then it's like, you know what, I know you would like the plot to go this way, but that character is not going to have it. You know, they're not, that's just not going to, it's not going to play out. It's not going to be realistic. Mm. And that's what I tend to find. I think even if I do outline a little bit more or try to get a few chapters ahead, I think I have to at least have written a little bit. I have, even if it's like 10,000 words or something, just so that I know the character or characters, if it's a dual perspective novel or whatever, but just so that I kind of know what I'm writing about. Because for me anyway, I kind of just need to know who they are and the kinds of, well, you know, things I think they might do. Because to me, you can write something, you know, on a blank piece of paper, you can outline something about, you know, pick two characters out of the air and this person's a journalist and this person's a you know, geography teacher or whatever it is. And you start going down that route. But then when you write the story and you realize actually they wouldn't do any of these things.
Mm.
That's the thing for me.
Mm. It's a nice feeling though when you feel like your characters are kind of telling you what they want
brilliant.
To do.
It's nothing better, I don't think.
Mm.
When you get to the end of the chapter.
No,
go on.
I was saying it's interesting you said the first 10,000 words as well, because I always have in my head the first 10,000 words. I feel like I need to get to that before I know if I'm going to stick with a book or not. Because I just like those first 10,000 words always feel really, really good for me.
Yeah, me too.
That,
yeah.
You start to think, right, how do I put together the things that I've put into that 10,000 words?
Yeah.
So interesting that you've got that in your head as well as the kind of marker point.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't, because I don't sort of fully accept that it's actually a new book until I'm about 30,000 words in.
Oh, 30,000, that's a lot.
But I think that for me, that's like, oh, I know for definite that there's absolutely no, I'm in now, like, as in I'm past the point of no return. I wouldn't fancy abandoning it after that. But 10,000 is about, I'm thinking, okay, I start to think, right, well, this is, you know, I think I'm in for the long haul now, but we'll see. I've still got time to back out at that point, I think.
Yeah, you do, yeah. When I was writing The Girls of Summer, actually, I just had to, it's funny you said about conning yourself, because I convinced myself in my head when I was writing The Girls of Summer that a novel is about sort of 55,000 to 60,000 words long.
Yeah,
so when I got to about 30,000, I was like, oh, you know, about halfway through now, which of course is not true. Novels are normally 60,000 words long, but that was quite an effective trick to get to feel like I'd done a bit more than I actually had.
Yeah, I honestly think it's such a bit, it's a bit like a, I mean, I know it's a cliche, but writing a novel is like a marathon from the point of view, you know, it is one of those things. I think you have to play mental tricks on yourself to get through to the next mile or the next, you know, the equivalent is if you're running, it's just like, well, I'll just run 10 miles. If I can just get to 10 miles. And when you get to 10 miles, it's like, well, if you've run 10, you could probably run 15, you know, and it's like, well, you've done 15 miles now, so you could definitely get to 20. And it's a bit like that, I think, when you're writing, it's like, you know, you have to do all these little bits of mental gymnastics. Do you tend to write? Are you one of these people that can hop around? So if you think of a scene that's further on in the novel, you can go, I'll write that. Or do you write in a very linear way when you write in a first draft?
Again, you know what? Again, it's interesting because I feel like I didn't realize how much stuff I learned from that first novel that I'm speaking to you now. But interestingly, I do write very chronologically. Well, I say chronologically, obviously my novel does jump around in time, but I guess in a linear fashion now. Just because when I was writing that first novel, I did initially just write the scenes that were really standing out to me and that were really in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just as a way of actually getting me writing and some words on the page. But the problem with that is then you end up with a load of scenes at the end that you don't want to write.
Yeah.
So then like getting to that end point was really, really difficult.
Yeah.
So now I try really hard to write in a linear way. The one exception is when sometimes there's a scene that you know it's going to come and you know it's going to tell you a lot about what the book is actually about and what's going to happen in the book.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that thing again.
That's
about
a good point, yeah.
That thing again, I definitely do my best thinking when I'm writing. So I knew when I was writing The Girls of Summer that it was going to be this kind of big moment of reckoning, this big moment when things were going to be revealed. And I could kind of visualize the scene, but I didn't know exactly what was going to get said and what was going to happen in the scene.
Yeah.
So I got to probably a certain point, I don't know, that's maybe about 25,000 words in.
Uh-huh.
And this scene was going to come quite a bit later, but I just knew that I had to go and write that scene. And then, as you said, the kind of the characters took over a little bit. They were kind of talking. It sounds so kind of silly to say this, but they kind of almost told me what
they
was
do
going
though.
To happen,
no, it doesn't sound silly.
About.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And then I could go back and I could write the rest of it after that.
Yeah, it doesn't sound silly at all. I totally agree. And this is what I mean. I think the problems arrive when you really heavily plot something beforehand and you don't have any flexibility, you can find yourself kind of shoehorning your characters into things that they wouldn't do. And not only that, I think as well, I think it's always less predictable if you just go with it and they do. I love it when I don't know whether you're the same, but when you're writing a scene and your character does or says something that you genuinely didn't know they were going to say or do, you know, 5 seconds before you wrote it. And it sends the scene or the story in a totally different direction that you weren't expecting. I love that. That's like the best part of writing for me.
It's such a good feeling. I think the only better feeling than that is when you all of a sudden find yourself writing something that like solves a thing that you put in the novel earlier weren't sure why it was there. And then you've just written something and just all the strands of the novel come together. And
you're, I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't realize why you were doing those things at the time, but obviously there's just something in the background that's telling you to do them.
And yeah. It's incredible.
Why they first. Yeah. Oh, it's just the best feeling.
Subconscious mind is like ridiculous. I wish I was as clever as my subconscious mind.
Don't we all?
It's doing all that. So you're like, oh, that's why you put that really bizarre little thing that you put in there or whatever. Yeah, it's incredible. So when you write, you're talking about like hopping, you might hop to a future scene or whatever. Do you, in terms of like the actual technical side of it, do you write in Microsoft Word or do you use a piece of software like Scrivener or how do you go about it?
I just write in Microsoft Word and I have been thinking about using Scrivener because I've heard so many people rave about it. And it's funny because I feel like since I got the book done and since I finished the book, I've kind of become so much more aware of all these kind of writing communities and podcasts and people who've got all these amazing ideas about how to kind of write a novel in the best and most productive way. But when I was writing the novel, I really wasn't aware of any of that stuff.
Yeah. So I think you're busy writing.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But yeah, just in my little writing bubble. But yeah, I didn't even really kind of know that there were programs out there for that. But now I'm aware, I do keep on thinking, really should get on that and really should try it.
You should give it a go. It's not for everybody. I mean, as anybody that listens to the show, you know, there'll be a number of them like rolling their eyes now going, oh no, he's not going to mention it again. But I do. I absolutely love Scrivener. I'm a total zealot with it. And I'm not one of these technical people that like nerdy people that loves like really complicated software and all that kind of thing. It just genuinely helps me write the novel in a much more effective, just more productive way. It's just easier to do because essentially it's a bit like having an unlimited amount of Microsoft Word documents, but all in one document. So, you know, you can just create a new document down the side and you basically have a binder and you create a new document. And that, depending on how you want to break up your novel, you could break it up into scenes if you want to, or chapter. I mean, mine's chapters, but some people will have scenes and then they'll just put the scenes together however they want, or parts or whatever. Mm. But each one of those things has got a little note card that you can have attached to it where you can have a little outline or you can make notes or give yourself a note to do something in the future, or you can take snapshots of something so that if you want to try it two different ways, you can take a snapshot of it and then roll back and do it a different way. So there's so many different things with it. But and the best thing to do is, if you do have it, because I think you can download it for free and try it. And there's loads of really good YouTube videos, like, you know, learn the basics in 10 minutes or something, just to get you up and running with it.
I need to give that a go. I mean, I'm writing my second book to be published, kind of third book in total at the minute, and that's definitely one that's gonna need a lot more editing, and I feel like that sounds like it'd be really helpful for editing and kind of moving things around and stuff.
That's the best thing, yeah, because you can just grab something and just move it. And likewise, I mean, what one of the things that I do is when I'm writing and I might have written a chapter or a scene that they subsequently think, well, hang on, this doesn't belong in the book now, or I'm not sure about it, I can just move it to, if I have a folder with like all the offcuts basically, and I just drag it into there. And then so many times by the time I've got to whatever draft of the book, I can go back in there and go, actually, I'm glad I didn't throw that thing away, because now I do need part of it, or that would be useful for this thing or whatever.
You know, I probably could have used that, because when I was writing The Girls of Summer, I did do it in Word, but I just had like a folder for it and a load of separate documents in it. But I'd just call them stuff like chapter 2.1 or
something. Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't like I could find anything if I wanted to find it. I just had to go into every document and try and find it. So
with your writing now, as you say, you're obviously already carrying on with the what will be the next novel that you publish. I know we're jumping ahead a little bit because Girls of Summer hasn't even come out yet, but it's about to, and it will have by the time this podcast comes out. And how's that going? Did you find writing that book, any different to writing Girls of Summer? Did you find that the experience had kind of moved on a bit, or I know you're kind of doing it now, but how are you finding that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really difficult, to be honest. And I think this is something that I'm kind of comforted by, the fact that I've heard a lot of other debut novelists say that. The second book is really, really hard. And
Yeah.
my agent actually warned me that the second book would be really, really hard. And I
Yeah.
think at the time I didn't quite believe her. But turns out it is really, really hard. So I actually have so I wrote and scrapped a novel, which I spent about a year writing after I got the book deal. I knew I didn't, my heart wasn't in it. I didn't want to do it. I did send it to my publishers anyway and kind of said to them, like, look, I don't feel good about this. I don't feel excited about it. Obviously, I want to send it to you guys so you know I've not just been messing around for a year. Let me know what you think. And there were things they liked about it, but definitely the reaction was kind of lukewarm. And I think particularly their main thing is they want me to be writing something that I'm excited about. So I think he knew that that wasn't going to be the one. And then at the same time as that, I'd also been kind of working on another just kind of for fun novel, that might become the second book. It might be that parts of that or ideas from that become the second book. But yeah, at the minute I'm kind of in a bit of a place where I'm not actually super, super clear on what the second book is going to be. Which for me, definitely very unexpected because I did have such a dream experience with writing The Girls of Summer. And I think of course you have this perception that, you're gonna get a book deal and kind of everything's that's the hard bit over. And in some ways it is the hard bit over. Obviously, it's really lovely to have that book deal and have that boost. But it certainly doesn't make the writing any easier, I'll say that for sure.
As you mentioned, so many people find the second book difficult. Unless that, I mean, you get the odd time where someone's actually already written the second book, and that when they get the first book published, that does happen sometimes, just because of the way that what's happened with their submissions and their journey to publication or whatever. But most people that are having to kind of go for the next, write the next book or whatever, it's difficult. It seems to be a number of different things. Obviously, I guess there's this sense of expectation that wasn't there with the first book because only you knew about it before you send it out, and now you've kind of got this other team of people that are looking forward to reading this next thing. And I guess maybe that's part of it, would you say, the expectation?
Yeah, the expectation and pressure is definitely a big thing. I mean, you kind of said nobody really knew about when I was writing the Girls of Summer, and that was very true because I really didn't tell anyone at all that I was writing it. My partner knew because I live with him, so for him that was quite obvious that I was sort of
It's what
writing
you
a book.
doing in there,
Would have been a very hard thing to hide. But other than that, like my parents didn't know, my friends didn't know. Actually, when I told people that I'd got an agent, everyone assumed that I was talking about that very first book that I'd written, which people did know about. But when I didn't get an agent for that one, I think I was just quite, I don't think embarrassed is the right word because obviously it's not an embarrassing thing, but I guess I felt kind of a bit silly that I'd kind of told everyone about it and then it had kind of come to nothing. So I didn't really want to talk about The Girls of Summer. So it was actually a really special experience in lots of ways because it was so private and it was so low pressure. And obviously when there is that expectation of, that people are waiting for your book, that it is going to get published, that is definitely an extra layer of pressure. I think also just I think thinking time is so important in writing, and I think as writers it's hard for us to realize this because obviously if you kind of feel like you're sitting around not actually doing the writing, you feel like you're not working. But I do think that like thinking is writing. It's just as important. And with The Girls of Summer, I'd kind of had that really long time period where I was sending my other book out on submission, kind of doing edits, but then waiting to hear back from people and then doing some more edits. So I had so much thinking time with that to I come up with an idea for a new novel, and I wasn't even really consciously trying to, but obviously just you have your life experiences and things you watch and things you read, and these all kind of contribute towards your idea for your next book. Whereas for me, the actual process of getting a book deal happened very, very quickly. So then it was almost, it felt like I'd literally just finished The Girls of Summer, this project that I'd kind of poured my heart and soul into. And everyone's like, right, what's the next book about? You've only just got your head around the fact that there's even going to be a second book. So I think for me, I kind of came up with an idea, started writing it because I really wanted to, I guess, show that I could. But I just hadn't had that thinking time. And I think that was really important. And I definitely, hopefully, think I'm getting to a point now where I am having that thinking time a little bit more. I feel like I've got ideas I'm excited about now. So hopefully it all works out.
It will do, I'm sure of it. And in terms, so you kind of alluded to it there, but with the Girls of Summer, in obviously in contrast to the first time that you tried with the other novel, how your actual path to publication, how did that play out? So you finished it, you had a version you were happy with, and then what, you just sent it out to agents, or you, how did that go?
Yeah, so I sent it out to I think I sent it out to 7 agents in the first instance, just kind of in 2 batches, but only a few days apart. So that was sort of just one batch. And definitely in my head, I had this thought of, well, you know, this is not my first time at the radio. I've done this process before. This will just be my first batch. And then there will, I'm sure, be another batch in a few weeks or a few months or whatever. Mm-hmm. But really, really quickly, I had people come back and say, oh, we want the whole thing.
That's
and
great.
So I think I quite quickly, and you know, this was in kind of a couple of days, I knew that it was kind of this was feeling better than with the last one. People had it for a little bit. I was kind of getting more requests. I think I maybe got kind of, you know, say 5 out of 7 people want to see the full manuscript.
That's brilliant.
And then there's a situation where when agents know other agents have it, they will move quite quickly.
Yeah.
And with the particular agent I signed with, which was Ariella Fine at United Agents, who is brilliant. I emailed her to say, oh, look, just so you know, other people have now requested it. And she read it overnight, called me the next day, was obviously really excited about it, which was amazing. I did have a few offers of other agents as well. Mm-hmm. But I think she just, you know, she really stood out to me. She was just so passionate about the book. She just had such a clear vision for it. It was kind of a little bit of a no-brainer, to be honest, to go with her. And then we did some... We started to do some edits on it, and you know, she sent me some things to do, kind of said, you know, take a few months to go away and do this. And then she actually called me and she said, oh, you know, how are the edits going? And this was probably about a week or two after she sent them. So I was, you know, I was actually working 2 jobs at this time, so I was quite busy anyway.
Yeah.
So you know, I was you know, I said, I've looked at them, I haven't really started yet.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, okay, well, so I've actually been thinking about it. And I think because this is such a topical book, I'm kind of worried that someone else is going to be submitting something else soon similar. She didn't have anyone specific in mind.
Sure,
she just thought it's so topical, it's bound to happen.
Yeah.
So she said, publishing all closes down for the summer, and it closes down kind of at the end of this week. So can you get all these edits to me by Friday? And by this point, you know, we're on Monday.
Yeah.
So I just had this just frantic, crazy, just sleepless week of, again, working 2 jobs, but at the same time, doing all these edits on this book, just constantly on the phone to my agent. Just, it was, yeah, it all just seems like a fever dream now. It seems absolutely insane. And then she sent out the book to publishers the next week. I was actually going on holiday. I was going down on a little caravan holiday to Norfolk. So I was there when she sent it out. And she actually called me when I was on the beach, and it was, you know, you're sitting down, and we had our first preempt, and we actually got several preempts. So we were in a really nice position where we were able to kind of choose which publisher that we wanted to go with. I ended up going with Transworld, with Penguin Random House, and then kind of within a few days we'd sold the US rights and foreign rights to various people as well. So it was a really kind of crazy, really fast kind of dream experience. But obviously, you know, I'm totally aware that that's not always the case, because I did go through the experience on the flip side as well of sending a novel out for submission and just getting absolutely nothing.
I'm sure that made it all the sweeter.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it definitely did. It definitely did. And it just kind of made me feel that I'd done the right thing as well with scrapping that first novel.
Yeah,
it was, I mean, obviously, best day of my life, just amazing feeling getting that call that I got the book deal.
And when you were sending it out, both when you were sending it out to agents and then subsequently when your agent was sending it out, would you say because of that first experience, did it make you more grounded or, I don't want to say pessimistic, but how did you feel when you sent it? Did you feel any different when you sent that out as opposed to your first novel?
Yeah, you know what? I did feel different. I don't think I felt pessimistic. I think I had much more of a feeling of, you know what, I've got nothing to lose, because that when I did send out the first novel on submission, I didn't get an agent. It was completely heartbreaking. It was, you know, obviously a lifelong dream. And I think when you're writing that first novel, you really can't imagine yourself ever writing anything else.
Yeah.
And you feel like, if I don't get an agent with this is it. Like, I'm never going to be an author. So then I think the second time around, I just kind of, in a way, cared a bit less, because I just thought, you know what, I've been as rejected as I can possibly be rejected now.
Yeah.
So I may as well just, you know, go for the absolute dream agents, just put myself out there. And I think maybe you would think that that would have made me pessimistic, but I do also think I felt very strongly in my gut that The Girls of Summer was a much better novel. I really, really felt that. And I thought, even though I got all those rejections the first time around, obviously I had some positive feedback from people. I'd had things that people had, the advice that people had given me that I'd really taken on board and I'd really listened to. So I think I actually felt quite optimistic. Maybe I shouldn't have felt as optimistic as I did, but I definitely remember going into it thinking, yeah, like I think I can do it. If it's not this novel, it's just gonna be the next one or the next one. I'm not gonna give up until I do it. So
that's great though. I think that's great. I think that's a great message for everybody listening out there that's on that journey for sure. That perseverance.
I hope I would have. Obviously it's hard to say now. Maybe I would have given up after a few more, but definitely
don't
definitely
say that, don't ruin it.
No. Definitely at the time I definitely felt like I would just keep going until I did it. Unfortunately it was The Girls of Summer. It all worked out in the end.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So as we kind of move towards wrapping things up, What would you say has been the most helpful piece of creative or inspirational advice that you've been given along the way? And it might not necessarily be specific to writing. It could just be something to do with creativity or your career in general.
So it's not even really, it's not really writing advice. It's not really career advice either. But one of the best pieces of advice I ever had was from one of my very, very good friends, Beth, who she said to me, people just think about you a lot less than you think that they do. And I think that we all spend so much time kind of worrying about what people think of us. And even though that is just general life advice, I think that's so applicable to writing and creativity, because I think the biggest thing that kills off creativity is the fear. Just that fear of what are people going to think when they read it? What are people going to think when I'm kind of putting myself out there? Are people going to think, oh gosh, you think she can write? And, you know, just all these like negative thoughts that you have. And you know what? People might think that about you. People, you might get a book published and people write horrible reviews. You might send a book to an agent and they think, oh, she can't write. All that stuff might happen. But also people just aren't really, even if someone thinks that, then they're going to go away that night and they're never going to think about you again, probably. So I think just worrying less about what people think of you. And I think that's great advice. It's not something I always listen to. I definitely worry a lot about what people think of me as well. But I think it's definitely something that I always try and keep in mind when I'm writing and just in life in general.
I think you're exactly right. It is that saying, isn't there, about you can't control what people think. You can only control your reactions to what, you know, they say or the what they think, the way that you, that's the only thing that you've kind of got any control over.
Exactly.
I think that's great advice. Okay, so just remind us where people can find out about more about you and about your book, and just obviously tell us when The Girls of Summer is out.
Yeah, so The Girls of Summer is out on the 25th of May with Penguin Random House, and you can find me, I am on Twitter, What Katie B Wrote, that's Katie with an IE, and I'm on Instagram, Katie B Writes, and I'm also on TikTok, Katie B Writes, but I'm not very active on there, but I am on there.
I'm not on TikTok.
It's not Katie B Writes, sorry, it's Katie Bishop Writes, I think.
Katie Bishop Writes. Okay, well, I'll put all of those links in the show notes anyway, but for now it's been great speaking to you, Katie. Thanks for coming on Joined Up Writing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so lovely.
There you go. Thanks again to Katie, and I'll put all of the links in the show notes over at joinedupwriting.co.uk. That's it for this week, other than me reminding you to make sure you subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and then you can have the podcast downloaded automatically every single episode. Also, remember to leave us a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts, because it does help others to find the show. And, you know, as I keep saying, just recommend it to 1 or 10 or 20 of your friends. That would be brilliant. But otherwise, that's it for this week. So thanks for listening. I'm Wayne Kelly. Happy writing. Stay safe, and I'll see you next time.